Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
And welcome in to hour number three. We're past the halfway point here on Chase Willie and D-Mace, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You can listen on 106.3 and, of course, always on the Game Nashville app. We'll see if we get a chance or get any information here in the next few minutes on injury issues. We do know that Treylon Burks is activated to get back on the practice field. We'll see where that goes. We'll see if you get any hints on Malik Willis this week, or if Ryan Tannehill's making any progress here. And to help us out with that, we've got Jonathan Hutton from Outkick 360. He joins us every week at this time, and he's sponsored by Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars and Edley's Barbecue. So, Hut, what's going on?
Willie, it's the impossible task of trying to decipher injury concerns with the Tennessee Titans. I would say it's right there with an NHL team in trying to really pin down when a guy is going to be able to come back and play.
Yeah, you don't get a whole lot of information on either one. That is for sure. So, Hut, let's look at this. We got Burks back at practice. Mace took a lot of time this morning breaking down what he sees with Malik Willis, the progress from week one to week two. We might see him again for another week. We will find out. But you've put together some offensive trends for the second half here, which will be very important here. So what are you seeing?
So the trends of this team last year to this year have flipped. So they really struggled to put points on the board early last year. And the first half offense this year, regardless of quarterback, has been okay. It's the second half where we see a big drop-off, and that's where we saw a drop-off Sunday night where, Willie, if they just go get a field goal at the beginning of the fourth quarter, the same drive, Mace, where they threw that second down pass to Nick Westbrook-Ikhine down the right sideline. Really nice throw from Willis. I thought it was going to end up being a good catch by Ikhine if he made it. It was difficult. But again, he's put in that situation because they're not deep at receiver. Everyone knows that. But they were just outside field goal range. And I thought if you get a field goal there, it's a two-possession game with the way the defense was playing. I thought the game was over. And they couldn't do that. They ended up screening to Hilliard on the very next play after the incompletion on second down. He got blown up. And they ended up punting in Chiefs territory. I thought that's really where things turned, because Mahomes got the ball back, went on that drive, and he had his, what I would say, 450 yards passing, but an MVP moment in that fourth quarter with the couple runs and the touchdown and the two-point conversion. But Willie, the Chiefs in that game, 91 offensive plays, and held the ball for more than 41 minutes. And it came down to the fact that the second half offense for the Titans just couldn't get a first down and run clock. I mean, it's really bad when they hit six plays of 15 yards or more in the process of scoring their two touchdowns in the first half. And then they proceed to have drives that gain at most 8 yards over the course of the rest of the game and finish that stretch 0-for on third down. And the Titans have the worst second half offense in the NFL, fewest points in the league in the second half. They have gained an NFL low 102 yards on average in the second half. And they've converted only 24% of their third downs in the second half. That's got to change at some point if you're going to point to reasons why they're going to win in the playoffs and or win this week. You know, it's always going to be a tight window game. And right now they're not finding those moments in the second half the same way they are the first. And they're not scoring a lot anyway. So point being, the philosophy I thought flipped in the second half. I love the read option with Willis. I like how they got creative early on. I didn't see that in the third and fourth quarter. Some of it's penalties. Some of it is just play calling and not just sticking with the run.
I think the RPO and the read option is as we know it as, I think will be an important element to try to take to the next step if he has to play. Again, talking about Malik Willis, we're talking to Jonathan Hutton. Looking at Mike Vrabel's press conference, we'll play a little bit of it later in the show. He would not, and this is not a surprise at all, he would not put a percentage on Ryan Tannehill's progress. It will be a very light practice, he said today, so we probably won't know much today. My suspicion is the ankle is very much going to be an issue again. And so the RPOs are going to be interesting. How much do you think Treylon Burks, if he's able to get on the field, could help, especially in that area? I feel like that would fit pretty well with what he was used to at Arkansas.
Yeah, I'm with you. And we've already seen some, you know, jet sweeps and different things with him early on in the season, trying to get creative with him. So even the preseason. So, yeah, I'm all for that. Willie, you mentioned Burks, and I think they'll do everything they can to get him on the field this week. They desperately need help, and while he may not be the savior, see if you agree with this. So the Titans, what, 0-6 when they went to VY, and VY became the rookie of the year, offensive rookie of the year. I'm not saying Burks is going to do that, but Vince gave them a spark that season and some momentum and a guy that they could count on to make a play using the best assets and why they drafted him. And I thought in camp, in mini camp, OTAs, we know the whole saga with Burks, but man, if he can come in and around the same time, give or take a few weeks, around the same time, and just create some, you know, explosive plays to keep the offense on the field, what a boost that would be for the team that you know you can rely on from a coaching staff perspective. The defense and special teams has also been really good, especially recently. Stonehouse this past week, Haskins on kick coverage. I've been very impressed with that area. And the one area that's lacking is the passing game. They just need something there. And right now there is nothing. And Burks can at least give you the ability to work in Malik Willis's best traits, which is getting him on the move and allowing Burks to do exactly what he did in the SEC.
Now, Hutt, with that being said, everyone has their view on how Malik Willis is doing. You know, his first game, it was rocky, and you expected it to be that, but they still end up winning. Why? Because they leaned on Derrick Henry, and he rushed over 200 yards, and that's just what Derrick does in situations like that, especially against the Houston Texans. This game, you sort of, you know, allow him to do a little bit more, but not as much as he did, not overly as much as he did in the first game. Actually, I think he threw the ball more in his first game as a starter than he did his second game.
Yeah. Yeah. He threw five more in the second game, but he completed more passes in the first, I think. Yeah. I mean, but I thought he threw the ball well. Mm-hmm. There are a couple throws where it wasn't good. But a couple other passes, guys, I thought early on they got him into a rhythm. There was some confidence there. He was 4 for his final 15. I'm not going to sugarcoat this great debut and then second performance. It's not great. But also, like, this has kind of been my soapbox and minis over the offseason. Like, when even down 3, we knew in overtime they were not going to go down and get points. It was just you just knew. And that's the issue here, regardless of quarterback, is they've got to have the ability to have a guy come down with a catch, not catches, but a catch. And they don't have that. Vrabel was talking about that with Ed Werder. Mm-hmm. Malik Willis even said post-game, hey, I was just hoping one of these guys would get open. It's not all on Willis. I do think they were more creative this past week, Mace. Mm-hmm. I like the read option of Willie, the RPO. But there has to be more of a quick passing game, whatever he was doing well at Liberty, the reason why you drafted him, the reason why people thought he was first round talent, there have to be elements of that, but there have to be people that are going to step up and help him. And right now, it's a sad sign when all they do is talk about how great Cody Hollister is at blocking, and he's on the field for like 70% of the passing downs. That's not ideal for a guy making his second start that is not ready for the here and now, but is a project for the future.
I just think in a situation like this, Hutt, it's hard to evaluate Malik Willis, because not only is the offensive line inept at pass blocking,
yes,
but your receivers can't get open. Like seriously, like they cannot get any separation. And for a quarterback, that is just like the most frustrating thing. And then when you get an opportunity to make a play, whether it's Conley or NWI, you got to make those plays for the quarterback.
Conley's got to make that catch.
Exactly.
Yes.
So it's just hard to evaluate the quarterback with this, this personnel in front of him.
Yes. I'm also thinking, though, in the moment, like Westbrook Akine's got to make that catch. They have no business putting him in that situation. Mm-hmm. And the way this offense is constructed, where you're expecting a guy who it's like paying a guy $20 million a year that's a $5 million player. The guy's not going to get better because you give him more money in the offseason. Like it's still the same skill set. He's not a number one guy. A true number one receiver comes down with that. Mm-hmm. And you know, I also understand you've got, you know, backup tight ends for Kansas City making big grabs down the stretch of that ball game. So I concede that point. They're also running open because Kelsey and others are getting trailed and double teamed. The point being, there's no one that's going to take the offensive attention away from anything other than Derrick Henry. And there's nothing that scares you within this offense. We've seen flashes over the last couple of weeks of Austin Hooper, but nothing much, nothing consistent. And again, the trend after halftime is really bad for this team, as they're stuck in the mud after starting fast. And that's something that they didn't do last year. It was flipped. And I it's really inexplainable whenever you kind of narrow down the focus of why they're so awful coming out of halftime.
When we come back, we'll tell you what Mike Vrabel said when he was asked about the A.J. Brown trade. We'll get Hutton's take on that. Jonathan Hutton from Outkick 360 is with us, and we will have another round of Titans discussion on the other side. But, Hutt, I believe you have a word.
I do. Edley's Barbecue is great for lunch, great for catering, big events to your weekend family gathering. If you've got tailgates coming up, I'll be at the MTSU game, for instance, this Saturday. Would love to bring some Edley's along for that. My great friends at Edley's Barbecue, they've got you covered. Voted Nashville's best barbecue 4 years in a row, and I've vouched for them and their Nashville-style barbecue for far longer. From corporate meetings, boxed lunches, weddings, rehearsal dinners, holiday gatherings are coming up for the office. Big or small, your neighborhood Edley's Barbecue location, they've got your back here. A tribute to all things Southern, authentic to all things Tennessee. Four locations in the area: Sylvan Park, East Nashville, 12 South, and now they're open in Donelson. You can check out all the locations and check out Nashville Style Barbecue at edleysbbq.com.
Back here on Chase Willie and D Mace, Jonathan Hutton from Outkick continuing to join us. A couple of snippets from the Mike Vrabel press conference. He was asked, and you know, you certainly understand his answer here. I'm not even sure who decided to bring up the question. It is on everybody's mind in a, hey, what if you still had A.J. Brown? Somebody asked him some form of that question. I didn't hear how it was worded. He said, A.J. Brown plays for the Eagles. Our next game is against the Broncos, which is exactly what Mike Vrabel should say. But, you know, Hutt, it is interesting how each week it does sting it seemingly more and more. We don't know how it's going to look. Maybe in another month, Treylon Burks will be a contributor, and it won't sting quite as much. You never know what's around the corner for A.J. Brown. But right now, boy, they're really missing him.
Willie, they have 21 catches for 247 yards since the Raiders game from wide receivers. It's really thin margin for whenever they're having success on the outside. So it's a fair question. I was asking this question recently, like individually across the entire league, who do you think has the biggest regret? Because that I was jumping off the Ursay thing there about coming back with Frank Reich and doing it, but the whole AJ trade would have to factor into that answer at some point within like a top 10 for me. If, you know, Brady coming back, does he really enjoy it? Sean McVay turning down media after a Super Bowl win to maybe not even make the playoffs and really struggle. Rodgers, list goes on and on. That would be up there for me, though. AJ Brown being traded to Philadelphia because of how sound this team is in other areas. You can trust just about every other area. And I get the offensive line is piecemeal together, but there's just the playmakers aren't there. And Treylon Burks is going to help, but it can't just be him. And hopefully that helps Robert Woods as well whenever Burks gets back.
Yeah, when you're in a win now and you see opportunities, for example, what if Josh Allen's elbow is a real issue? And
yes.
Maybe that levels the playing field. It stings even more that you're maybe not in position to take advantage, at least the way you would be if you had your homegrown guy that was so promising.
Yes.
One more for you, Hutt, then I'll pass it back to D-Mace. Ryan Tannehill at the podium right now says the ankle is getting better. He is making progress. There's going to be some pain tolerance involved. He's going into some detail on it, but I still don't know that it means he's going to be ready for Sunday. And remember, they have Sunday, Thursday coming up here. It's so interesting, Hutt, because the next two games are against Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers, two guys that people were saying, hey, what if the Titans got one of those guys instead of Ryan Tannehill?
Yeah, and Tannehill was lobbying to play behind the scenes last week in Kansas City. I didn't think he looked particularly good, though, whenever he was out on the field. So I don't think he was playing, even though I was told he was lobbying for it. The Thursday night plays a factor for me in the decision of what they're going to do, because I think regardless of pain tolerance and having to answer and check off all these questions, Vrabel said, you know, how much is it going to affect his mobility? Can he protect himself? How good can he be? Is he going to injure his ankle further? And he could not answer all those questions in a positive way. So that's why they made him inactive. The Thursday night, though, where you get the extra rest out of that, and also knowing that with or without him, it's going to be a very close game. Like it's not like he comes back and you're beating the Broncos by 17. So that plays a factor for me, because I would want to make sure that he's ready to go. It's also that, like, there's speculation it's a high ankle sprain, but to me, a high ankle sprain, you could put him on IR and bring him back afterwards. If he's not going to be able to help you at all, I don't know why you would keep the active roster spot when you don't have to. Again, just my random thoughts there. So I do think he's closer than not. And I do think they really want him to play, because I think even with him last week, he's going to help them check down and get a couple more first downs than what they did, just to keep the defense on the sideline and rested a little bit more. Either way, though, they are facing a really good secondary, which and I know that they've traded away some good pieces on the defensive front from Denver, but their secondary allows their front to get after the QB, and pretty much every defensive front can right now against the Titans quarterbacks. And I think that has to weigh on the minds of everyone that's trying to do what's right for Tannehill and the ankle and the mobility.
We're talking to Jonathan Hutt in Outkick 360s, presented by Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars and Edley's Barbecue. And Hutt, going to shift gears a little bit. College football, the rankings out last night: Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, TCU, Tennessee falls to number 5. But I want to hit you with something that we were discussing earlier. Our morning show had a very big debate about it. The what-if game. With Alabama going down to LSU, LSU's now on the fast track to get to Atlanta and play for an SEC title against Georgia and win the West. If LSU were to beat Georgia, which I don't truly believe is going to happen. I think Georgia is the much better team. But Tennessee runs the table. Georgia has one loss in the title game. How do you think the committee would handle that with a two-loss SEC champion And then Tennessee sitting there with that beat that champion by a lot at their place and only has one loss to Georgia. So how do you think that would look?
It's fascinating. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't put LSU in over Tennessee based on resume, body of, and the fact that, I mean, I just think Tennessee's a better football team. We also saw the head-to-head matchup. I think it's easier to argue Tennessee's better than LSU than it is to argue the SEC champion shouldn't be in over a team that didn't win the SEC. Because that will be a point of emphasis if that happens. And that will be a great win, the best win of the season if LSU does this in this scenario. I also think there are other paths for this to be crazy. And I think Tennessee is going to get in because TCU, they're very good. They have to come back and win games every week in the fourth quarter. They've got Texas coming up. I just, at some point, I see TCU losing a game. And then the Pac-12, I think those three teams, UCLA, USC, and Oregon, beat up on each other more than one team grabs the brass ring and wins out. So I think there are other scenarios where LSU, given this scenario in Atlanta, which I don't think will happen, but I'm playing your game here, Chase.
Sure.
I think there's a way for them because the committee, while they value Georgia, they certainly that's Georgia in the win for LSU. They certainly value them because of where they had Oregon last week. They absolutely value Alabama and Ole Miss, and LSU beat both. So yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think about. But not only could they lock in their game for the SEC championship, they in this path would have the best win of the college football season and on the final week to make an exclamation mark on their entire year. Still, I would still today tell you, I think we all know Tennessee's better than LSU, but I don't know exactly how much the committee weighs one category versus another. I can only tell you how they've ranked teams over the last 2 weeks, and you can see where teams have moved up and down. And yeah, I think there's, can you imagine the Pac-12 champ if they got left out and LSU won and Tennessee's already in because TCU lost?
Yeah.
I mean, again, like it's crazy to think about, and this is a perfect year for a 12-team playoff. It would be a blast.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that's why they're doing it, to kind of avoid some of these arguments, because I'll give you another what-if scenario. Ohio State, Michigan's close. Ohio State maybe loses by a field goal. Michigan wins it, you know, on a last-second field goal. TCU loses. Tennessee's sitting there. They run the table. Georgia wins the SEC. Could we have an all-Big Ten, all-SEC playoff?
Yes, I think we could. And, you know, Michigan, look where you can just look at Michigan compared to TCU, look at Tennessee and TCU. I agree with what the committee did this week. And I like how they're valuing TCU and their resume now. Again, I want to know how much they put style points on these matchups whenever they're doing this. Maybe they don't, but what Tennessee needs to win out, they also don't need to have a sleepwalk game the same way Georgia did with Missouri. Like there needs to be no other doubt other than the one loss to Georgia as to why, you know, they're in with one loss and not the conference champion. I'm very high on Tennessee though. I think other than Georgia, you can make the best case for their team top to bottom based on what we've seen this year. And Ohio State and Michigan get a chance to prove it, too, with their upcoming head-to-head matchup.
Well, it's certainly going to be interesting for sure. Hutt, appreciate the time.
What would you guys do with that, though? What I mean, would you vote LSU in that or no?
No.
No.
I don't have LSU in.
No.
Even if they won the SEC, and I know it would be chaos, but I would have Tennessee and Georgia in over LSU, even though they wouldn't be the champions.
Yes. Oh, and by the way, this was the year to get LSU if you were going to get them.
Oh, yeah.
I think LSU is about to be what Texas A&M should have become.
Yeah.
With Brian Kelly at LSU. They are about to be really good, and they already are with what they've done. Crazy turnaround for them since we saw them play the Vols.
Is Jimbo going to keep his job?
I think so. Billy Lucci says so at Tex-Ags, and he's as well-connected in College Station with the big boosters as anyone. he's got to change offensive philosophy and turn things over to someone else to have a chance to keep his job after next year. But the buyout is nuts.
I know.
But they've got the money to do it if they want to, but I don't think he's losing his job this year. Well, hang on. They're playing Auburn this week, right?
Yeah.
Cadillac Williams has that team playing well. That give me a week. I need to see this game.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. We will talk again next week, next Wednesday at noon, and we'll see you Monday for the Eddie George Show at 6 and Peabody as well. You can listen to Hutton with Outkick 360 weekdays from 2 to 5 on 94.9 The Fan. Hutt, appreciate it as always. We'll do it again next week.
Always enjoy this, guys. Have a great day.
You too. Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360, joining us. Coming up next, we'll check in here a little bit from what happened over at the Titans today. But first, Willie, tell us about Loan Pronto.
All right, let's talk Loan Pronto. They want you to know that if you're in need of cash for the holidays or just in general, and you need to pay some bills, here is what they offer right now, the Express Equity Line of Credit Program. Especially if you're a homeowner and you have a good locked-in mortgage rate that you don't want to mess with, that's totally fine. You can still get cash out. You don't have to do a full home refi. You can tap a small portion of the equity and have a super low rate. With Loan Pronto's Express Equity Credit Line, you can close and get the cash in 7 to 10 days. And for example, a $50,000 loan would cost you around $300 a month. So use that money to pay off high interest credit cards. Get those credit card bills down to zero. Consolidate other debt. Pay off a car loan. Start a home improvement project. With Loan Pronto, you can access up to 95% of your home's equity, and 9 out of 10 homeowners don't even need an appraisal. So even if you did a total full refi recently or just bought your home, you can still tap the equity with a fast, easy program that I talked about, the Express Equity Line of Credit from Loan Pronto. Find out more. Call Loan Pronto, 615-499-5780. That's 615-499-5780, or go to loanpronto.com. Equal housing lender, NMLS 166-1781, subject to lender approval.
Chase Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you. Appreciate Jonathan Hutton for joining us in the last segment, as he does every Wednesday at noon. And, of course, that is brought to you by Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars and Edley's Barbecue. Always enjoy a little Edley's and Blend Bar as well. Mike Vrabel addressing the media today. Treylon Burks returns to practice. What does that mean? Ryan Tannehill was able to say that this injury is getting a little annoying at this point. Which, again, kind of backs up our theory.
High ankle sprain.
High ankle.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing you can do but get treatment. That's all you can do. I'm sure he's getting treatment almost 24/7. But you just got to wait for the ankle to heal on its own. I'm sure everything he's trying has helped with the process, but it's one of those injuries you just can't rush. You can't, because you find yourself right back at square one if somebody else falls on it or you get tackled wrong.
Here's a few minutes of what Ryan Tannehill had to say about the injury.
How are we feeling?
Oh, the question of the year. Feeling good. You know, just getting better day by day. But definitely, you know, seeing the progress now, so that's exciting.
For the pregame warm-up, when you went out there to kind of test it, it didn't look like you were doing much, like, test mobility. What were you looking for, you know, in that pregame warm-up to determine whether or not you could go?
Yeah, I just went out and played a little catch. That was kind of the plan heading into it, so to see where it was at, and that's where we were.
Did you have any setbacks, Ryan, from that game when you were injured in, like, Sunday, Kansas City?
No.
Mentioned kind of the pain and the pain tolerance overall. Is that still something that you're working through? Is it significantly better than it was a week ago?
I think it's definitely getting better. I think that's going to be something I'm dealing with for a while, just the nature of the injury. It's not something that gets better overnight. It's definitely testing my patience and has up until this point and still doing so. So just trying to stay patient with it, doing everything I can to help it heal as best it can, and you know, excited to get back out there at some point.
How much practice time do you feel like you would need before you, to be able to test it on the practice field before you feel comfortable going out there and playing in a game?
Yeah, I would need some, not a ton. You know, it's just got to get to a point to where I can go do my job effectively and be able to, you know, run the offense, move around enough to not be a statue in the pocket and not put myself, you know, or the ball in harm's way by not being able to move.
What was the experience like, I guess, on Sunday, you know, with the headset and as opposed to the previous week when you said you were watching the game with your kids? I mean, good to be there, I guess, at least, and we were able to talk through some things with Malik and Todd.
Yeah, it's definitely a step up from sitting on the couch, no doubt about it, but, you know, still not a good feeling. You know, seeing my guys out there battling. Yeah, I was able to be on the sideline, try to help out there, talking through things with Todd, with Malik there on the sideline. But, you know, it's definitely much better to be playing.
How much did you think it helped to have you there with Malik, just to kind of have a sounding board, you know, after a drive or whatever?
I'd have to ask Malik. And I tried to help him, you know, tried to communicate what I was seeing and anything from the defense or from him that I saw. I tried to, you know, convey that over to him and allow him to carry forward in the game. But definitely be a question for Malik.
Did you show up at the stadium with hope that you would play, or did you have a pretty good sense all along that you probably weren't going to be able to?
Yeah, I mean, the week was tough, you know, just heading into it. You know, didn't really know how things were going to turn out, but, you know, had tried it several times throughout the week to know it was going to take, you know, a big step forward on Sunday.
Ryan, when you're able to get back, Traylon now is entering the 21-day practice window. Can getting you and him back maybe help give a much-needed boost maybe to this passing game?
I hope so. You know, I think Traylon's excited to be back. I'm excited to have him back out there. I know we are, as an offense, excited to have him if he's able to go this week. You know, a guy who was coming along nicely for us early in the season, kind of hitting his stride, finally kind of settling in, hitting his stride, you know, being in his rookie year, and then unfortunately, you know, went out with the injury. So, you know, it's been good seeing him get better over the course of the last few weeks, just talking to him in the training room and seeing where he's at and how his rehab and progression has gone. And, yeah, so definitely excited to start that process of getting him back on the field.
What's he give Ryan, Traylon, whenever he does come back? What you know, does his skill set bring to the wide receiver core, to the offense, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, he's got what you look for in this building and how we like to play, which is strength, size, speed. He plays the ball well, has good hands, so definitely has all the tools that you look for in a wide receiver and fits our scheme well.
What have your days been like over the last couple of weeks, you know, as far as rehabbing goes and studying film? Like, when you're inside, how many hours are you working at it?
A lot. And I don't know. Haven't sat back and counted, but it's a lot. You know, starts at in between 6 and 6:30 in the morning, and, you know, I'm here until 7:30 at night. So included in all that time is the rehab, is meeting, is practice, or whatever my version of that is part of my rehab process. So, yeah, there's a lot that goes into it, a lot of different little treatments and rehabs and modalities that we're using. But, you know, just trying to take it day by day and then get a little better every day.
Titans quarterback Ryan Tannehill talking to the media today and talking about his high ankle sprain without saying it's a high ankle sprain, even though we all know it's a high ankle sprain, is really what it sounds like.
Pretty much so.
to this point. But so it kind of makes you think, listening to that, he's probably not playing this week.
It's going to be tough, man.
I think it's going to be tough. D-Mace, I think I feel the same way. Would doubtful be the right term in your mind?
Yeah, pretty much so. I just think the next two games, I would be surprised if he played the next two games. I really would.
Yeah. Well, because you got the short turnaround.
Exactly, because you got the short turnaround. So I would be, even though the turnaround doesn't mean a lot to him, but I still would believe that, you know, them putting him out there on Sunday or waiting until Thursday, because my thing is, okay, you get past Thursday, because I think they beat Green Bay without Tannehill. Green Bay's awful. Yeah. They're just awful. Their defense would do enough to win that game, and I don't think Green Bay can stop Derrick Henry.
That could be the case this weekend.
Exactly.
Too.
So to me, it's if he can't do the things you're asking him to do by Sunday, I'm going to give him basically another bye week to get ready, because that's essentially what it would be. because you play on Thursday and then you got a whole weekend and everything else off until that next following Sunday.
Yeah. We'll continue the discussion coming up next here on Chase Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Ian Safar on the ones and twos back there. Appreciate his help this week with Nick on vacation. Talking about the Tennessee Titans, and I just saw this from John Burton. Jeffrey Simmons seen in a walking boot. He's been battling an injury. He even said it last week.
Oh, no.
But he's been powering through. But you could tell as he would try and chase Mahomes around that he was limited on that. So just something to keep an eye on for sure. Willie, I know you said that you have a Titans subject to bring up to us.
Yeah, I do. I have a little hypothetical.
I love hypotheticals. Jeff Fisher did not like hypotheticals, but I like hypotheticals.
See what you think. And by the way, I think you could see it. Remember, Jeffrey Simmons and Ryan Tannehill got their respective ankle injuries about 15 minutes apart in the real time. Remember, it was bang, bang. And, you know, they've been dealing with it ever since. It's a different kind of ankle sprain, right? The rolling of the ankle makes it a little bit easier to play on. So it doesn't shock me. I'm not panicking that he was in the boot. The boot just helps you. In support, it just helps you get around. It makes sure it stays immobile when you're not playing. He's not going to practice again. Hopefully, it's getting a little bit better and not getting worse. Let's just hope that that's the case with Big Jeff. Now for Tannehill, the high ankle sprain. It takes a lot longer to heal. You can't move on it. That's a different type of ankle sprain. So let me throw this at you. We were just talking about the Sunday-Thursday turnaround. If I told you that he was going to miss both of those games, and then be ready to go close to 100% after that for the rest of the season, and you split these two games, and you would be 6-4 going into the final seven, would you take that and never play the games? In other words, Malik Lewis has got to start two more games. He would split those two games, and so he would be 2-2.
And they'd be 7-4?
You said they would be 6-4.
6-4?
Yes. Would you take that?
I would.
Yeah.
I think I would too.
Yeah. I would too. Yeah, I would take that. That's an interesting hypothetical.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Titans, even without Ryan Tannehill, I think they can, or I believe they can beat Green Bay. I just think, especially if Green Bay, I don't know who they have this Sunday, but if they lose and then have to turn right back around, and they've lost receivers, they've lost guys left and right to injury, then have to turn right back around and play on Thursday. I think the Titans can beat them without Ryan Tannehill because of the way the defense is playing. Now, losing
Jeffrey, the Cowboys at home on Sunday,
that's going to be a tough matchup.
It's going to be rough.
Yeah, it's going to be rough. So
and you already know that McCarthy is going to be out for blood.
Oh, he's going to try to put as many points as he possibly can. I think the Titans can beat Green Bay without Ryan Tannehill. The one that is a little tricky is the Denver game. Only because, not necessarily because their offense, Denver's offense. I think Denver's offense is just as bad as the Titans' offense. It just looks different. But their defense is just like the Titans defense, and that's really good. So that's why I would take the, it's like, give me this. If you don't want me to play the games, I won't play them. Just split them down the middle. Because I think that one, that game's going to be tough this weekend for the Titans.
Yeah.
I just think it is. Cause that Denver defense is good. And if Russell Wilson shows any signs of the Russell Wilson that we've seen in past years, that's not good for the Titans, especially if Jeffrey Simmons is in a boot.
Yeah.
If you take a look at the stats for the Broncos and the Titans, they're very similar. Very good defenses, offenses that have been very limited, a lot of close games. The Titans are simply better at, or have been better at winning the close games than the Broncos. I think it's going to be another game like that on Sunday, 17-12, 13-9. The Broncos had, what did they have, a game where they won, like 11-9 or 11-10? I think it was like the first
game.
When
that's the Jacksonville game?
Yeah, I think it was 11-10 was the score. But here's why I'm pointing out the next two games. Like, I think it's really important that by Thanksgiving weekend, you have Tannehill back. I think that's a realistic time frame for a high ankle when you get down to it. If he plays in the next two games, I still think he's going to be battling mobility, just based on what we know about high ankle sprains. Maybe he really is making progress. Maybe this is sandbag. It is interesting how they have him go to the podium, and he takes all the questions, right? He gets four, five, six questions about the ankle, and he's very guarded about what he says, but he is there. They didn't have to put him there, I guess. But after the Broncos and the Packers, two very beatable teams right now, look at the stretch run for the Titans. Bengals, Eagles, Chargers, Cowboys, two with the Jags, who, say what you will about the Jags, they do have some talent, and then you've got the Texans. So I think the schedule arguably is fairly tough in the final seven or final eight games. I really would like to have Ryan Tannehill fresh and ready to go as much as possible for the stretch run, even if it means he doesn't play the next two.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I would take it at that point if you know you're going to have him for the end of the season in the playoffs. That's the most important. So I think it's a good hypothetical.
Right now, I'm looking at their schedule. And if I had to pick, like, they say, well, just pick four definite games or definite games on that schedule that you think the Titans would win. And granted, what is their record now? They're five and three. The four
you
games.
10 games left. I'm sorry, you got 9 games left.
Uh-huh. So I would say Jacksonville, the Texans, and the Packers. I think those games right there, because they play Jacksonville twice, so those four games right there would put them with 9 wins. And the other ones, I think, is a toss-up to me. It's going to be difficult. That's why having Ryan Tannehill after this Packers game is going to be crucial, because I don't know if they beat the Bengals without Ryan Tannehill.
I don't think they I'd have to see a huge improvement from Malik Willis.
I don't think they beat the Eagles without Ryan Tannehill.
Okay, so D-Mace, what you're saying is you would split with the Jags. Uh-huh. If you split with the Jags, you get one of the two between Broncos, Packers, and you take care of the Texans. That's 9 wins. Does 9 wins win this division? I think it very likely does.
I think it does, yeah, because the other teams are just bad. Or, you know, in Jacksonville's case, they have good personnel, but they don't know how to win those games that are close.
And they've already lost 6. So exactly. They don't have a lot of margin for error here. Now, could they rip off 4 or 5 in a row? It's possible, I guess. They've got the talents. Like I keep saying every week, the stats are there for them. They've lost all of the games they've lost have been very close. So if the light goes on, they could make a run. But I think the odds are 9 wins might do it. 10, I think, definitely does it. And so 10 is still realistic. But you see what I'm saying? When you start sitting there and say Titans are unanimous, they're going to win the division, they got to find a way to scratch out these games, and they might have to do it, again, slogging through with all these guys getting hurt. It's hard to keep overcoming that week after week. They need some good news on the injury front. They need some good fortune getting guys healthy.
Yep. Coming up next, we'll talk to Predators captain Roman Josi. He's in the on-deck circle on Chase, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. But first, Willie, you have a word on Lee Company.
All right, Lee Company, it's a perfect segue into the captain, Roman Josi, because they are a proud sponsor of Nashville Predators hockey, both on our radio coverage, which resumes tomorrow in Colorado, the final stop on the 5-game road trip, and Saturday in Smashville when the Rangers come into town. Lee Company has all of your needs taken care of when it comes down to helping your home stay on top of things, running efficiently, heating, cooling, plumbing, electric. They can service all of those, home improvement, home maintenance. Lee Company helps in all of those areas. So any of those things, just keep that phone number top of mind that I tell you about every time, 615-567-1000, or go to leecompany.com. They'll help you. with any of your needs. If your heater's not running properly, give them a call. They'll take care of it. Hot water heater, air conditioning, plumbing, you name it. 615-567-1000 or LeeCompany.com. Lee Company, let their decades of expertise go to work for you. Roman Yossi is next.